You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Oh, yes. I've come to feel very close to the birds, and I've come to realize how they feel when...
Wow, what a beautiful day for a drive. Come on, sweetie bird. You're going with me. Where are all those birds coming from?
Lady, you gotta get out of here.
Look at the poor Batman. They've patched his eyes out.
Never mind that. That's just Hitchcock. He makes a cameo in all his commercials. You gotta roll the windows up. Get your windows up.
The power windows don't work.
Lady, I know we don't have time to discuss this, but you should have taken your car to Perfection Auto Works. They do windows.
You heard right. At Perfection Auto Works, we do windows. Power windows, that is. Our free 26-point inspection will have you covered. At Perfection Auto Works, we won't give you the bird. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessories store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
To the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, and listened to talk show weekends in all of Arizona, now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk in Southern Arizona. Thanks for making all that possible. From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. With us today, Dr. Steven Zunis of the University of San Francisco. We'll talk with his state representative, Pamela Powers Hanley, and Jim Hanley has our financial report. It's a very busy day, a lot of information. Glad you could join us. Here's Dr. Steven Zunis of the University of San Francisco. Doctor, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. Thank you.
Good to be with you again.
By the way, Stephen Zunis, USF since 1995, teaching courses on politics of Middle East and other regions, nonviolent conflict resolution, U.S. foreign policy, globalization, serves as the founder, first director of the Middle East Eastern Studies Program, prominent specialist on U.S. Middle East policy, one of the most respected Middle East experts in the country. Doctor, let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan. Nobody's talking about it, and we want to know if it's still a clear and present danger to the United States, the Taliban rules, and what does that mean for the security of the United States?
Well, it's a clear and present danger to the Afghans, but at this point, I do not think they are much of a threat to the United States. The Al-Qaeda forces had been vanquished way back in 2001 following the first U.S.-led assault. There may be a few of them around, but they don't have an operational base, you know, like they did prior to 9/11, where Osama bin Laden, you know, and his supporters could operate freely, both in terms of planning international attacks as well as backing the Taliban and their ongoing struggle with the Northern Alliance. But you know, that's all history. The Al-Qaeda is not really much of a presence there anymore. And also the Taliban, I think, learned a very hard lesson. If you harbor groups that are going to attack the United States, you're putting yourselves in jeopardy. And they want to get busy pressing the people of Afghanistan, not be distracted by the risk of another war.
Is there an alliance with Russia and China with the Taliban that offers problems for the United States down the road?
Not an alliance. I mean, remember, Russia and China, you know, see threats from Islamist extremists within their own borders, and so they're generally pretty negative regarding the Taliban and its ideology. I mean, at the same time, though, you know, given that the United States has been vanquished and no longer U.S. Troops in this area, they are. You know, they may be open to trade deals might be more open to some cooperation than the United States or other Western countries are currently. But I don't see anything approaching any kind of formal alliance or collaboration, or certainly not along the lines, again, that would threaten U.S. interests.
The American press and many pundits have called the exit from Afghanistan by U.S. forces a debacle. How could it have gone if it didn't go the way it did?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think part of the problem was that the White House received intelligence reports that seemed to indicate that the government would be able to hold on longer than it did. I think we've seen this before in Vietnam and elsewhere, that things are going badly, and as the reports from the ground make their way up the chain of command, people don't want to be the bearer of bad news, so they end up putting a rosier and rosier spin as it makes its way up the bureaucracy. So by the time it gets to the top, it's giving an unrealistic positive approach to things. Basically, what we had in Afghanistan all those years, really going back to the initial conquest under the Bush administration, was a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it would have collapsed sooner or later. You know, Biden had the courage to call it out, as messy and as it may have been. I mean, instead of building civil society and stable institutions, the United States kept relying on these warlords and these tribal militia and these opium magnates and all sorts of other ne'er-do-wells who, in certain ways, weren't a whole lot better than the Taliban. The corruption was rampant, one of the most corrupt societies in the world. You had to pay a bribe to get anything done. There's all sorts of instability. And we keep hearing reports of Afghans who have been saying that, yeah, these Taliban guys are pretty heavy-handed. They're pretty rigid. We don't like some of their, super ultra-conservative interpretation of Islam or whatever, but at least they brought stability. At least you don't have to bribe to get something done, you know? It's like, there are a lot of Afghans who really did see the Taliban as the lesser evil.
How was your reaction to the world accepting the refugees from Afghanistan?
Oh, it's been mixed. Some countries have been more open than others. It's obviously, we get very strong anti-immigrant sentiment, often even Islamophobic kind of sentiment when you have people trying to escape these conflicts in the Middle East and the greater and beyond, where the United States has been involved. But a lot of places, a lot of other places, people have been welcoming and opening up. Obviously, quite a transition for these people. But the good news is that the Taliban has quietly been allowing more and more people to leave. They are continuing to be Afghans who want to get out are able to get out, but it is a very, very difficult situation. And the main thing we have to worry about right now, frankly, is that half the population could be starving as winter sets in. The government the United States had set up and maintained all these years would end up being just totally dependent on foreign aid. And the combination of this dependency and the corruption, not to mention the Taliban tendency to blow up development projects and that sort of thing, has created a situation where there really isn't much of a domestic economy to speak of. And combined with the sanctions, the United States and other countries have placed on Afghanistan since the Taliban took over, including freezing the government's assets and overseas banks, essentially having a trade embargo and the like. It's creating a desperate economic situation. The World Food Program and other UN officials are talking about how this may be the worst humanitarian crisis in the world unfolding. And of course, you know, if the Taliban repression isn't something that would encourage people to leave, you know, this desperate economic situation, including a threat of starvation, might lead to an even greater refugee flow.
You ever foresee the recognition of the Taliban government by the United States?
Well, not anytime soon. I mean, remember, it took us over 20 years before we recognized the government of Vietnam after we lost that war. I think that for political and other reasons, it would be difficult for the United States to do that anytime soon. I think that there will be quiet diplomacy, as there has been already, between U.S. and Taliban officials in terms of combating ISIS and other extremist groups that may operate within Afghanistan's borders, in terms of the curbing the opium trade, in terms of refugees and the like. So there will be contact, but I don't see formal recognition anytime soon. But you know, there's nothing really preventing us from doing so in theory. I mean, let's remember that the Saudi government, which has received billions of dollars worth of U.S. weaponry and support, you know, and many billions of foreign investment and trade and everything. I mean, their interpretation of Islam, their treatment of women, you know, their behaviors are just about as bad as the Taliban, and it hasn't gotten away with the United States, again, having this close relationship.
Talking with Dr. Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco, Middle East expert, let's talk a little bit about Iran, if you don't mind. United States, I believe it was yesterday, hit Iran with a fresh set of sanctions as the president went to Europe to meet with the European leaders to discuss the possible resumption of the nuclear talks with the Islamic Republic. Treasury Department announced new penalties against senior members of the Iran Revolutionary Guard. Those sanctions, by the way, unrelated to Iran's atomic program. The Biden administration says it wants to build a potential agreement to revive the languishing 2015 nuclear deal. What are the chances of the Biden administration getting that done?
Well, it's been a problem because while both countries agree in principle they should go back to that agreement, the agreement was working just fine before the Trump administration pulled out. It was only after the Trump pulled out that Iran ended up beginning to revive the parts of its nuclear program that had been prohibited. So the Iranians would like to see the sanctions lifted. Obviously, the United States would like to see the nuclear program cut back to what it was prior to the U.S. pulling out, where they had a small scale program, but so restricted that there was no physical way possible they could develop nuclear weapons from it. But the problem is they've both been saying you go first. I mean the Iranians. We're saying, hey, we're not going to lift sanctions until Iran goes back to the limits that had been set in the original agreement. But the Iranians say, no. In the nuclear agreement, we ended up destroying all the stuff we had built in return for lifting sanctions. We destroyed all this equipment and all this material only to have Trump reimpose the sanctions anyway. We're not going to move until the sanctions are lifted, and you promise you're not going to reimpose them, at least as long as the Biden administration is still in office. But Biden is not willing to do that. So, in other words, they're both waiting for the other side to take the first step. And whether they can get to some kind of compromise on that is what's been so difficult so far. And the problem is we may have missed our chance because when there is a more moderate government in power, they were unable to get an agreement. But since the talks broke off, Iran has elected a very hard-line government. Now, I met personally with the Iranian foreign minister in Tehran 2 years ago, and he talked about how the pulling out of the deal had made it very, very difficult for him and President Rouhani and the other moderates, because the extremists could say, see, we told you, you couldn't trust the United States. You know, we destroyed all these all this equipment and material, and only to have the sanctions imposed anyway. And look, this is exactly what happened. The U.S. broke the agreement. We can't trust you. You moderates are naive to trust the United States. Well, now those hardliners, in fact, the new foreign minister I actually met as well when he was the Majlis Speaker's foreign policy person, that guy's a nutcase. I mean, really. And he's the guy in charge now. And so it's really unfortunate that that U.S. policy is actually strengthened the hardliners there, and now it's going to be very hard, to put an agreement back together.
The level of threat to the United States from terrorists, let me take a quick break and evaluate that and where it might come from as a test, not only to the Biden administration, but as a threat to all of us. Let me take a quick break. We'll come back with Dr. Stephen Soonis of the University of San Francisco right after these messages.
Hi, my name is Jim Hanley. I was born and raised in Tucson, and I raised my own boys here. I want to get to know you, your dreams and goals, and help you shape them into a plan for success. I've been helping hundreds of Tucson families do this since 1993. It takes experience and know-how to navigate the rocky shoals of the financial markets and keep you on an even keel. I look at every account I manage every day to find opportunities to grow your nest egg, to make you at ease and enjoying your life. I want to show you the highest integrity and reliability you can find anywhere. That's why I named my business with my own name, Jim Hanley LLC, and why I'm a member of the CFA Society of Tucson. Find me at jimhanleyllc.com or call me at 623-3646. That's 623-3646. Jim Hanley LLC is a registered investment advisor and a member of FINRA SIPC.
As a business owner, you're responsible for the growth, leadership, and the daily operation of your business. This includes your interaction and advocacy for your customers. Tucson Business Owners, Inc. offers you the opportunity to educate and advocate about community policies affecting profitability. By becoming a member of Tucson Business Owners, Inc., you can have an effect on common issues, such as curb appeal, municipal budget priorities, and keeping a vibrant workforce in the area. For more information, visit TucsonBusinessOwners.org.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the Tom C. Scott Political Forum. My guest, Dr. Stephen Soonis of the University of San Francisco, one of the preeminent Middle East experts in the country. Doctor, got about 4 minutes here. What threat do you see during this continuing Biden administration to the United States from terrorists who are there, ready to harm us if given the opportunity?
Well, the big threat is the remnants of the Islamic State. This is the Iraqi-led group that grew out of the U.S. Invasion and occupation, radicalized a generation to embrace an ideology so extremist that even Al-Qaeda thought these guys were too much. And they no longer hold swaths of territory in Syria and Iraq as they did for a time. But they are still operating underground in many places. They're a much bigger threat, however, to the Middle East and Europe than they are here. We really not have had much in the way of ISIS attacks, though you've had a handful of people who wanted to be imitators of one kind or another. The main issue, I think, when you're dealing with terrorist groups at this point, the attention needs to be much more on intelligence and interdiction. Sending in the troops, using the drones, this kind of thing has tended to create terrorists faster than we can kill them, because inevitably you end up having civilian casualties. You end up triggering this kind of xenophobic response against Western intervention and the Islamic world and that kind of thing. And I really think that we need to be vigilant against the kind of threats it's the kind of thing that that needs to be done on, again, stressing intelligence and interdiction, see it more as a criminal act and not as a war on terrorism, as we've done in the past, which seems to have gotten us into so much trouble. I mean, obviously, some paramilitary actions, to root out these cells may be necessary here and there, but let's not think about invading any more countries.
Yeah, tell people how they can get more information about Dr. Stephen Zunis, where your writings are found, and how people can be in touch with you. I know you communicate with people all over the world, so how do they do that?
Oh, you can reach me at the University of San Francisco. Just Google my name, Stephen Zunis. I also have a website, which is a bit out of date. I need to update it, but you can find some of my writings there at stephenzunis.org. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N-Z-U-N-E-S, one word, stephenzunis.org.
You've been doing this a long time. Give me a 60-second biography real quick.
Well, I am a professor of politics and international relations at the University of San Francisco, and I've traveled quite a bit in the greater Middle East and around the world. I've long emphasized the importance of human rights and international law, and believing that our America's greatest strengths are in our values, not how many bombs we can drop on various countries. And so I've been using both my values oriented beliefs, but also the empirical knowledge I've learned as a political science to try to bring the conversation on U.S. foreign policy in that region forward.
Dr. Zunis, thanks so much for talking with us. We've been doing this for decades, and I've always learned every time I've listened to you, and that's why we talk with you as often as we can. Thank you so much. It's great to have you this weekend. Thanks for sharing part of your weekend with us, Doctor. Thank you.
Good to be with you again.
University of San Francisco professor and Dr. Stephen Zunis, one of the most respected Middle East experts in the country. We've had many conversations with him over the years. Coming up, from the Perfection Auto Works Studios, the John C. Scott Political Forum. All kinds of things happening in Legislative District 9. The line is wide and deep of those that want to go to the legislature.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Together they brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite, and Guigny's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out, Guigny's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
They've landed! They're here! They're here!
This is WHOR Television, and we're live. I cannot believe what I see. The ship has landed. It is beyond words. Oh, wait, the door is opening. There's a creature coming out, walking down the steps. He is speaking with the representative. Let's listen. It's so quiet, you can hear a pin drop.
Take us to your leader.
To be quite honest, you came at a really bad time.
Yes, timing is everything. And it's always a good time to have your car serviced at Perfection Auto Works, the leader in car repair, for over a quarter of a century. From our free 26-point inspection, we'll keep your car moving, along with the Earth's rotation, 323-8650, and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Pamela Powers Hanley is the progressive voice of the State House of Representatives. She's one of the more powerful, influential Democrats in the state of Arizona, one of our favorite lawmakers. Pam, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, John.
Well, you got a seatmate that's leaving, Dr. Randy Freese, who announced actually early in the summer that he was running for Congress, raised $500,000. Then he said, I don't want to do this, and I don't know what happened to the $500,000, but he's not running for Congress, and he said, I'm going to give up my House seat in Legislative District 9. That opened the door for a great number of Democrats who want to be appointed to that seat. It apparently happens after precinct committee people submit names to the Board of Supervisors. Supervisors vote. They need three votes to appoint a new lawmaker. So how's that going? And were you surprised to see this large number of Democrats saying, I'll go, take me?
Yes, I was. And I'm sorry, I got a little frog in my throat and I was making noise while you were talking. I'm sorry. But yes, there are 14 people who were lined up for Dr. Freeze's seat. And I sent him a text message the other night from the LD9 meeting talking about all these people. And he goes, well, I haven't resigned yet. And I said, well, yes, technically, but, you know, you did tell people you're going to resign. So, so there's 14. I'm glad we have a lot of variety. And we heard from 13 of the 14 on Tuesday night, two-minute speeches. I love the two-minute speeches. And there might be others step forward. This isn't like a final list, is what the PCs were saying. So, yes, the process, and Freeze's appointment is not the only one. In fact, before we got on the air, I went through the list of members in the House. There are seven appointments that are going to happen before January 2022, and Freeze's is only one of them. So we are going to have a lot of new people in the House, which is going to be a good thing. So what happens with LDs that have enough precinct committee people, they get together, a certain percentage of them, they have to have a quorum, and they have, you know, any number of people who they could consider. The people can reach out to them. The potential appointees can reach out to the PCs and, you know, talk to them, you know, send them flyers or emails or whatever. We have a vote, and then people have to get, I think, 50% plus one, and it's the top three names then are given to the Board of Supervisors. And so I'm familiar with this process because when I ran for office in 2016, Victoria Steele had stepped down to run for Congress, and so there was an appointment. And so what happens is that the PCs can say who they want. For example, I got the most number of votes in 2016, but I was not chosen by the Pima County Board of Supervisors. So the supervisors really can choose any of those three people that they want. And so appointees are technically considered incumbents, but they have never been voted into office. So these seven appointees that start in 2022, you know, I'm assuming they're all going to run for election in 2022, but since they've never been voted in, they're pretty vulnerable to being beat. I beat the person who was appointed, right? And this happens a lot. And so I figured out that there are going to be seven appointees, right, who have never been elected, and there's going to be 17 open seats on top of that in the House in 2022.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, amazing. By the way, State Representative Becky Nutt.
I don't know if it's the Dow or the Wolf of Wall Street that said, where there's great risk, there's great opportunity. So we have to look at this in a positive light, right? And
right.
So it is a mixed bag, but, you know, really half the House could change easily in 2022.
By the way,
in the election of 2022.
State Representative Becky Nutt, just a Republican from southeastern Arizona, she said she just quit. She didn't even give anybody a reason. She just said, I'm gone. And they ask her why, and I don't think she said why. I think she just said, I'm leaving.
No, she didn't. She did not say why. And she is, as of November 1st, she is, like, done and gone, you know. And so, you know, we've heard this story across the country of people saying, take this job and shove it. Some of these people are leaving, I think, you know, because of the stress. I mean, Dr. Freeze, you know, was... I had a long talk with him. He was just burned out. He sees the need for his skills in the hospital and sees the bolt, you know, that goes on in the legislature and says, my skills are needed here in the hospital. This is where I can really directly make a difference in people's lives, right? And so Sean Bowie. Sean Bowie is finishing his term, but he's not going to run for a reelection in the Senate. And Domingo de Grazia, not running for reelection. Me, I'm retiring, not running for re-election. So there's a lot of people are just saying, okay, it's time to step aside. And so there's great change. And like I said, I'm hoping it's going to be for the best.
Well, Kirsten Engel,
Republicans who are resigning. It's not just all Democrats who are resigning.
Yeah, Kirsten Engel, the senator, what is it, District 10? I'm trying to remember. Quit too,
District
because
10.
She's running for the Congress, so that opened up a seat, and they appointed somebody through that same process.
Exactly. So Stephanie Stahl Hamilton moved from the House to the Senate then. And the same thing with Raquel Turan. Raquel Turan, chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, it was a representative from LD 30. Her senator, Tony Navarrete, is now pending charges for child molestation, so he's in jail. So she's been appointed to the Senate for LD 30. Now LD 30's got to have an appointment. So there's this ripple effect of people resigning to run for another office, people being termed out. You know, Representative Pratt passed away. I mean, so it's like a whole mixed bag of open seats. I've never seen anything like this.
I don't think people realize how frustrating that job is. I only had a couple of years of experience with it, served in the minority. If you serve in the minority, I mean, you're about worth warm spit, I think, somewhere along the way, but maybe a little bit more than that. But it's difficult. I mean, every committee was stacked, 6 Republicans, 3 Democrats. You didn't ever get anything out of committee. You couldn't win a vote on the floor. Every once in a while, your vote made a difference, but it was so seldom that you wondered what the devil you were doing there. As Republicans have controlled this legislature for decades now, it's frustrating.
Well, it's not just that, you know, like this 2021 was really awful. In fact, Speaker Bowers was quoted in the Cap Times as saying that he was depressed about this past session because there was so much emotional violence and bullying. And it's like, dude, you're the speaker. You're in control, you know. Why didn't you stop it if you saw it? You know, and then he tried to say it was both sides of the aisle, and then he kind of said, oh, no. It was mostly his members. And, you know, the way we were treated was just hellacious on top of the horrible bills that they were trying to pass. You know, so that's sort of a given that you're going to have to fight tooth and nail to try to stop something. But, you know, to have the bullying and, again, emotional violence out of the mouths of the speaker.
By the way,
that's really a bad thing. So it's a good thing that a lot of these people are leaving.
You know, I just read an article by Jim Small, who was formerly with the Capital Times. He's been a long-time legislative reporter. He's with the investigative reporter group in Phoenix now, I believe. But he wrote a blistering condemnation of Governor Doug Ducey, actually claiming Ducey's killed people with his policies on COVID-19, literally was responsible for the deaths of literally hundreds of Arizonans. I've never seen an individual, one so respected as Jim Small, attack a governor so forcefully as he did. But I tell you, there's a lot of Democrats saying, you know, I told you, that's the real Ducey. He said Ducey placed ambition over, administrative responsibility and whatever and blah, 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 blah. But it was the most blistering attack on a sitting governor that I have read in literally a half a century, and I've been reading it for a long time. Pretty
right,
amazing.
Right.
And a lot of people, a lot of Democrats and a lot of Republicans too said, well, you're right. He's been terrible when it came to policies that could have protected his citizens, and he refused to do so. It was just pretty amazing. Well, the politics of Arizona is a difficult business, to say the least. There's no question about that. And if you're leaving, I understand. I thank you for your service.
So I have some advice for the people who want to run for office.
Go ahead.
And I congratulate them for doing this. Now, I listened to all 13 people's 2-minute speeches the other night, and what I want to say is that they all need to have issues. A bunch of them said, I am this, and vote for me because I'm this. I'm the blue candidate, vote for me because I'm the blue candidate, the green candidate, or whatever. You can be the blue candidate, and that's awesome, but you need to have what your platform is beyond I'm this person, right? There's a lot of identity politics.
Probably great advice.
And so you need to have your 3 issues. You need to have your elevator speech. I can't tell you how many times in 2015 and 2016 they say, what's your elevator speech? Give it to me right now, you know? So you need to be able to explain your issues and who you are in 2 minutes or less and get it all in. You know, lots of people start rambling and then they never really told us who they were, you know? So people should know what their issues are, be authentic, and just go for it.
Wow.
And run clean. A lot of people to run clean.
Ma'am, we're out of time.
There's
really
so much competition for the money.
I hear you. I thank you for your service, and thanks for being the incredible lawmaker that you have become. Want to keep this in the family. Go to our financial report coming up next. And, Pam, thanks for being on our show today. Thanks for giving us part of your weekend. I appreciate it so much.
Sure. Thanks, John.
You bet. Pamela Powers Hanley, my favorite lawmaker. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Back in a moment, we'll talk money with Jim Hanley.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
As a business owner, you're responsible for the growth, leadership, and the daily operation of your business. This includes your interaction and advocacy for your customers. Tucson Business Owners, Inc. offers you the opportunity to educate and advocate about community policies affecting profitability. By becoming a member of Tucson Business Owners, Inc., you can have an effect on common issues, such as curb appeal, municipal budget priorities, and keeping a vibrant workforce in the area. For more information, visit TucsonBusinessOwners.org.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Galleries saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Let's talk money with Jim Hanley. Jim, got about 8 minutes here, a little bit brief. I was talking to somebody you know earlier and ran a little bit long. Give me a two-minute summary of what's left of the Build Better Biden plan and what you think is going to happen. Is it going to collapse and nothing's going to happen and we'll all go to hell in a handbasket? And then a little bit about a quick market report, if you don't mind, please. Go ahead.
Not at all, John. Well, let's start with the market report. The Dow was up, but pretty flat. It was only up 142 points for the week. That's less than 0.5%. The NASDAQ was up a lot more. It was up 408 points. That was 2.7%. And both of them have rebounded considerably, from that poor third quarter that we had. The Dow's up 5.5% and the Nasdaq's up 6.5% since the end of the quarter, just in October. We're looking at new jobs claims, new unemployment claims. That was 281,000. That's a new post-COVID low, record low. It was 8,000 less than what was expected, and it was down 9,000 from the week before. On continuing claims, it's at 2.243 million. That's down 237,000 from the previous week. And the target for normalcy of people on unemployment claims is less than 2 million. So we're really looking at hitting that target pretty soon here. Wanted to also point out when we're talking about jobs claims is that even though there's less than two and a quarter million on continuing claims, 4.3 million workers quit their jobs in August. And so, you know, if they had all been able to go on claim, they would have really, mushroomed the new claims and people on continuing claims. And if you can believe it, in July, 11.1 million workers quit their jobs. And so the disruption, I think, in employment and those two elements, that's more than 15 million workers quitting their jobs in just July and August of the third quarter. really contributed to a lot of economic disruption in the third quarter. And indeed, economic growth slowed considerably from the previous two quarters. It was up only 2% annualized, in the third quarter. And if you can remember, I think it was up 6.4% in the second quarter. So, economic activity slowed considerably. So, as far as the Build Back Better plan goes, Joe Biden made a very impassioned appeal on Thursday to Congress to pass what he could, what he could. There is no increase in corporate taxes. I think that also scrapped was the meager 2 percentage point increase in the highest tax bracket. And it's a matter of the Progressive Democratic Caucus, the biggest caucus in Congress, just saying no, we're not going to go with the compromise that you virtually hammered out with Kyrsten Sinema to give her what she wants, and we weren't party to that compromise. We're also not going to vote on the so-called bipartisan infrastructure plan first. No, we're going to vote on both of those together. And so they really derailed Nancy's target for passing the plan for last week, for the end of October. So I think that we're going to see movement back to the positive. This progressive caucus just is signaling they are not going to settle for so much less. They left out completely paid sick leave and family sick leave that was in the original bill, 3 months of family sick leave. They cut it down to a month, and then it was removed completely. And so I wouldn't say it's a shell or a shadow of what was originally proposed under Build Back Better, but it's so much less that the progressives are holding out, and so I don't know. I don't know if it'll pass in November or not, but it's getting late. Joe Biden also made an impassioned plea, especially to Joe Manchin, to give him something to take to the climate change summit in Scotland, which is next week. And nothing happened there. It's very stripped out, as well, the climate change spending there. One good piece of news is that at the G20 summit, where Joe is right now, all those national leaders agreed that they are going to impose a 15% minimum corporate income tax. And so that, the corporations will have nowhere to go to find a tax haven, like so many U.S. companies have done. They set up these phony headquarters, in these faraway countries, and they really don't do any business out of them. But for their taxing, they claim to be in those countries. So we'll see what's happening, going forward. And I hope that new home sales, pending home sales, which down 2.3% in September, which I think is a good thing because residential real estate was just getting too hot. It was up 20% nationally at the end of August, and it's just that's just too hot. It looks, for all intents and purposes, like we have a bubble.
Well, Jim, by the way, wages jumped in the 3 months ending in September by the most on record dating back 20 years. So those working making more money. But those that are quitting, I don't know what they're doing for a living. We're out of time, Jim. People can call you at 623-3646. You're the smartest money person I know. And if people want great advice, they can go to JimHanleyLLC.com, a great website with tons of information that's free and available to you by just going online. It is a great website. I just compliment you every time because it is just, it's remarkable what you've done with that. Call 623-3646, talk to Jim anytime, and we're very pleased to have you on our show. Jim, thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
The pleasure was all mine, John.
Thank you so much.
Weekend, too.
You bet.
Okay, bye.
From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this has been the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, and listened to talk show weekends in all of Arizona. Now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk. Very quickly, a personal note. I have a PT Cruiser. I love this little car. It takes me everywhere I need to go. Air conditioner goes out. Temperature gauge climbs to we're all going to die. I called AAA. They rushed the car to Perfection Auto Works Wednesday. Get a call on Thursday. Mike Emery says, your car's ready. I went, really? He says, yes. I said, the cost? He said, it's the estimate. Just what we told you. Didn't have time to detail the car because we wanted to get it back to you as quickly as possible. That's service. I mean, who does that? What auto repair place does that? That's why we're so proud to have Perfection Auto Works as our prime sponsor.
Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.